Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Welcome to Food and Loathing, a savage journey into the stomach of the American dream, which has fewer drugs than Hunter S. Thompson's journey into its heart. I am your host, Al Mancini, a guy who was creating content before content creator was a thing, a veteran Las Vegas food writer, and the creator of the Neon Feast Restaurant Guide, which surveys the people who really know Las Vegas food to find out where they eat. Keeping me in line is my co-host, Samantha Gemini Stevens. She's a local food writer and admin of the Please Send Noodles cookbook and the creator of the Wishbone and Vine food blog. And she is also the editor-in-chief of the brand new neonnews.vegas.
That's right.
Hello, Gemini.
Hi.
Congrats on the new gig.
Thank you so much. I'm super excited.
Yeah. Before we get into where we've been eating and all that stuff, do you want to fill people in on what you're doing over there at neonnews.vegas?
Yeah. So, you know, working with you, of course, which is amazing. Just trying to add to the Neon Feast app, give people more information about the places that we're eating, if there's stories coming out about it, kind of feeding through some of the news we talk about here on Food and Loathing, and making a static site for people who either don't listen to podcasts or don't have the attention span to do any, you know, much of anything else.
Yeah. I mean, I say listen to the podcast because that's where we sit down with the chefs and we get nerdy and we
right.
get geeky and it goes deep. But, you know, when you walk away from that, you know, that like a few weeks ago, I played maybe 6 minutes with the new chef at District 1.
Yeah.
Right here on this podcast. I think maybe last week it was. And I thought it was a great interview, but there was a lot of cool stuff hidden in there that if somebody doesn't have the attention span for 6 minutes, and as we're going to talk about in the center of this show, modern content is 12 seconds long, right?
Yeah.
So we know that people don't always want to listen to that whole 6 minute interview stuck in the middle of a, what do we do, about 70 minutes a week in this podcast. So, you know, I went in, I pulled out the key stuff. We wrote a little article about the new chef, what he's there to do, how the prices are coming down, what his philosophy is, and bam, man, you're in, you're out. You read it, it takes you, what, four minutes to read the damn thing, and you're good.
A lot of people commute or they read their news in the morning before they go to work or something like that. So it's just another avenue to really help share all of the information that we are so lucky to have our arms wrapped around.
Yeah.
So yeah, super excited.
So just go to neonnews.vegas and we'll always have some stuff up there.
That's right.
We should also mention we're coming to you today once again from the patio at Dom DeMarco's Pizzeria on West Charleston Boulevard because pizza is in the air this week.
Yes, it is.
With the International Pizza Expo happening at the Convention Center. We'll have more on that very soon. I should also tell you that they're being very quiet right now, but our guests have already joined us, so they may jump in. We have Emmy Kasten and Alex Kasten here. Is that your last name, Kasten, Alex?
Yes.
I want to make sure I got that right here. So we are going to sit down and talk because Alex is like one of these people who's, how old are you?
I'm 16.
16 years old, and she's already has like 70 plus thousand followers on TikTok.
Amazing.
She does this shit, like every time I try to do a TikTok video, it sucks, and then I see her doing this great stuff. So I'm going to pick her brain, but I really want to talk. Her mother is one of the great. Hey, Emmy, how you doing?
Hello, guys.
Emmy's here too. Is her mic up? I'm not sure if I can hear her. Okay, cool. As long as you can hear her and as long as
Absolutely.
She's moving that needle, that's good. Emmy has been my editor on so many publications that I've written for over the years. And so we've got two generations of people who create content and content associated with food. And I really want to dig deep a little later in the show, probably about 15 minutes from now, into the way that people of two different generations approach telling the world about Las Vegas or about the food or about lifestyle products, which because I know that that's what Alex does a lot of, not just food, but also lifestyle products and things like that.
Yes.
But I'm just fascinated with how people that grew up with content creation and influencing and all that as a thing, how you guys view storytelling and messaging. So I'm going to pick your brain really deep. I hope you like, I hope you're ready for stupid questions from an old man who is so out of touch, because that's what you're in for in about 15 minutes.
We're here to learn too. Believe me.
We only learn by asking what sound like stupid questions to people who already know the answers, right? And I'm fine with that, man. I will always be the doofus.
Remember, Al, you and I share a generation, so I don't even know if you really need me.
But you're smarter than me. That's why you always edited my material. I've never really edited yours. Never. And you are in touch with the younger generation because you have reproduced. I have not, right?
So same boat.
I lost like everything. So I think we're going to have a lot of fun. But before we do that, man, we start off the top of the show. We try to make you hungry. We try to make you jealous. We tell you where we've been eating. The hope is really that you'll hear a couple dishes that sound good or hear about a place that sounds good that we've been to, and it'll make you want to go. But these ain't formal reviews, man. This is just us talking about the shit we do. So, Gemini, why don't you kick it off for us?
All right. Well, last week I was at Oscars for former Mayor Oscar Goodman's dinner series. It's a regular program there at the Steakhouse wherein Goodman talks about stories about his time as a Las Vegas lawyer for alleged mobsters.
Alleged. His job was to say they were not mobsters. That's
right.
What they paid him the big
That's
bucks
why
for.
I'm using alleged. I don't want anybody coming at me today.
Right. Most of them are dead. Most of them are out in Lake Mead, I think. I don't know. I don't know if any of his clients actually are dead or are in Lake Mead, but if I was a gambling man, the over-under would be higher than zero, I'll tell you that.
So he starts off each series with like a story that he kind of wants to tell, and then really quickly, it's only about an hour of speaking while you're kind of getting into the dinner, but there's a lot of questions and answers. So it was a really fun way to kind of get to know him, hear his stories, hear how people ask questions. But as far as the food, we had a mixed baby green salad and a spring onion soup with pickled ramps for starters. Both were super fresh, really, really refreshing. I know that sounds a little bit redundant, but I have to emphasize that because those things can be kind of boring sometimes. They were not. The soup was particularly flavorful, and I wanted just to take a gallon of it home. After that, we were served a New York strip steak that was absolutely fantastic, cooked perfectly, had a sauce Perigordine made with Madeira wine, truffles, and the last thing was a striped bass with a really nice skin. It had some fava beans, which were kind of fine, but I love cipollini onions, and they braised it and then sort of crisped it a little bit. So that was great.
When Oscars first opened like a billion years ago, you know, I was pretty hard on the place originally, but they have changed chefs. They've got, who's in there? Ben Jenkins, who was with the MENA Group forever. I believe he's running the kitchen in there now, if I'm correct. So, you know, I just need to get back in and get a total revamp on that place.
Yeah, I love it. And, you know, hey, great martinis. They've got a new patio space out there now. So, yeah, definitely go in. Maybe we should record over there.
Yeah.
Okay. I also went to Ada's, had some snacks and wine. I know, always.
We love all James Drew's restaurants.
We do. I had some stuff I had tasted before and even talked about recently, but the standout for me was this pork belly dish with some chickpeas and beans and a massive amount of flavor. And like we say, we already know their work is fantastic, so I'm not going to keep going.
It's the most creative of all of James's restaurants. I love what Jackson Stanford does in there. He's absolutely fantastic. Here's my question.
Yeah.
Has pork belly jumped back over the shark and it's okay again, or are we still bored of pork belly?
No, I think it's coming back.
It's coming because it went away for a little while.
Yeah,
it was,
and I'm
so
glad
overexposed.
It was overdone. But some of these preparations I've had lately, like people are getting super creative. This was cut really thin, had a almost a charred crust to it, and then served with this really flavorful bean. Okay. Like almost like a chana masala kind of thing.
Okay. So Alex, what do you think? Pork belly, jump the shark or back to being cool again?
Yeah, no, I love pork belly. It was never gone for me. Like
it never
left. Like when I was like 11, I seriously ate like pork belly like every day.
That's about when it was saturated.
Yeah,
when you were 11, about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You know?
And even now, like I love pork belly and it is really good for you. There's actually a lot of collagen in the fat of the pork. And it's really good. It never left. Like, it's so versatile, you know? Like, you can do a billion things with it. You can see if you can grill it. Like, I love it so much.
The cool kids say pork belly's in. I'm back for pork belly. Thumbs up.
On Monday, we went to Sparrow and Wolf for a Tinned Fish Club collaboration dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And holy shit, that thing was amazing.
Oh, I'm so bummed I missed that.
Not enough time. Oh my gosh. I wish you were there.
I
would have loved it.
There.
Okay, so you guys are both in on the tinned fish thing because I am
had
so.
Fish yesterday.
I am so not interested in tinned fish. I'm the only person in the world who has. It just feels like we all got scammed by the tinning company somewhere, man.
I grew up with it. Like, I felt.
Hey, you know what would be great, everybody? In a restaurant with really fresh food, why don't we take some non-fresh food and act like it's really expensive?
Some of these things are super expensive.
They are. They're ridiculous. Yeah. You know what? Spam was always super expensive when you looked at the price per pound of it, I'll be honest, and didn't make it anything better than Spam.
Right. But yeah, so I'm not, I don't have the time to go through all of it because it was that good. I want to tell you about every little thing. But I'll post some stuff on the socials and things like that. But I do want to say, you walk in, the first thing they hand you is this dirty martini that has a little brine in it. Mm-hmm. It's got the Gilda on top, which is can't even think today. The skewer with the anchovy, olive, and cornichon usually. This one had the olives with some sweet peppers on either side of the fish. So you got a little brine, a little sweet, then you had the fish in the middle. But I have video where as they get you the martini and then you start to walk into the private dining room, because it was a really small dinner. There was only 26 people.
You were packed in there like sardines.
You were waiting for that.
Oh my God.
No, it just came to me.
But they did a squirt of squid ink into the martini to just add that little bit of, and it was squid ink and oil, so it wasn't super strong.
Get a little bit of salinity
out
of that. A little more of that ocean.
And it looked really cool as it kind of billowed out into the martini, so that was really fun.
Cool.
And a couple of the dishes that I really enjoyed, one was a super simple bite of cockles in some of the oil that it came from. They're a little bit sweet, a little bit briny. Super simple and delicious. On the other side of the taste spectrum, super rich and savory, was a seared foie dish with truffles and then these super crispy baby eels. And it was amazing.
Damn.
Oh my God. Everything was just put together perfectly. The flavors they chose, the fish they chose. They had a grilled squid with bacon that was just to die for. So just what I do is shout out, if you're not part of the Tinned Fish Club in Las Vegas and you love tinned fish, get involved, because they do these small things.
Yeah, they do a lot of events.
Yeah.
They are a super active club.
Yeah.
If you are like the 99% of the world that is in love with, who is not me, you should definitely get in touch with the Tinned Fish Club, because they are hardcore about that.
Yep, absolutely. And then last night, I was invited by a friend to see some pizzaiolos and talk about the expo at Double Zero and Pie and Pub, because I wasn't able to go to any of the events or the expo.
Yeah, and I'll tell you about that later.
Exactly.
I wasn't either, but
exactly.
And
it was just supposed to be a chill out, casual, you know, environment. Because I was missing everything, I got the chance to go. I know you wrote a little bit about it already on neonnews.vegas, so I jumped at the chance. I wanted to see kind of what was going on.
By the way, I don't know what they're doing, emptying the garbage.
There's a little bit of noise, but it's not too bad.
So our apologies for that, but stick with us
here. We are outside, so.
Yeah.
I got to meet some great people, saw a lot of friends and industry folks, met more of the crew from Truly Pizza in California, which is a John Arena, Chris Decker, Michael Vaknin
thing, yes.
So
all
it made
the best
sense.
Vegas pizza I
right.
was in Dana Point, California. If you are anywhere near, I sent a friend there last week and he loved it, man.
Yeah. We went when we were in LA in January. We made the drive down. Horrible weather, totally worth it. And then I met some New York and North Carolina guys.
I think they're putting us in the garden.
I think so.
It's okay. We're going to keep rolling.
Yeah, it's fine. I met some New York and North Carolina guys who were hanging out together, including Chef Wiley Dufresne.
Oh, man.
And got to sit there and have drinks and pizza and snacks and have a chat and talk about not just pizza, but like why he wanted to get involved in things. And last night was casual, so there was no interviews. But I did leave with some pictures and a promise of an interview when he gets home. So
I want to talk to Wiley and tell him. Okay, so this is the deal. For those of you who are not familiar with Wiley Dufresne, well, shame on you. But
yes.
Clearly, when the molecular gastronomy movement was, when those phrases took hold, where everybody was talking
G-A-W-D.
About it. Yes. He was at the top of that. Of course, WD-50 in New York City. But if I talked to Wiley Dufresne, I would never even talk about molecular gastronomy. All I would ask him is to tell Carrie Simon stories.
Because I know, right?
When I was interviewing chefs for a Carrie Simon book and for a Carrie Simon movie, both of which were never released, but you may be seeing some of that over at Neon News sometime soon. But I never got to interview Wiley. And he was with Kerry at Prime Steakhouse in the Bellagio when they opened them. When John George opened it, he sent Kerry Simon out and Wiley was his right hand. So, oh man, I would just love to hear those
stories.
That would
be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's super humble, super chill. Like, he made a comment about, you know, oh, you know, the weather can't be that bad because I'm wearing shorts. Like, he's just the most down-to-earth person I've ever met from that kind of realm of chefs. And, yeah, just really enjoyed ourselves. Yeah, so had a great time, and we'll do some interviews soon.
Awesome. Okay, so it's to me.
Yeah.
I judged a 90s costume contest at the Legacy Club atop Circa on Friday. It was a blast. Look at my social media. You'll see how ridiculous I look. That is
it
literally
was amazing.
That's how I went to law school, like in 1993, with the long johns.
I was going to say, those were long johns, weren't they?
The multicolored long johns, and then I had like my cutoff, like tie-dye bleach splattered shorts over those, and of course a t-shirt, and rock and roll t-shirt, flannel vest, because, you know, I was a grunge kid in the 90s.
And Alex is looking at you like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, man, I did that for this contest. No, I wasn't in the contest. I have to say, man, bravo to the people who won, though, because there are a lot of really good contests. A contest entrance. Somebody was very much Justin Timberlake, circa that blue denim outfit that he wore with Britney.
The Canadian tuxedo.
Right? Like, yeah. that was really excellent contest. And I think he may have, he was in the top two or three. But the woman who won, man, she came in full crisscross garb. She had a baseball jersey on backwards and the big baggy jeans on backwards.
God.
And you didn't even notice her over the course of the night.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when she came up for the judging, I was like, oh, shit, that's it, man. That's my number one. I love that. I don't even like crisscross. A lot of grunge people, a lot of hot grunge girls there.
Yeah.
That made me and Sue very happy to scope out hot grunge boys and hot grunge girls.
Right?
It was very very sexy, very reminded us of the old days. Some of them weren't old enough to have done it originally. You
no.
can tell.
No.
You can just tell because I'm old enough to have done it originally, and they look better than me. I'll say that. After the event, we decided to see if we could get into Barry's Downtown Prime in my grunge wear, right?
Right.
But apparently I still got juice in this town. Nobody turns me away, no matter how stupid I look. So we succeeded, had some apps at the bar. Those Philly cheesesteak egg rolls were calling to me that Barry has been making ever since Nine Steakhouse days at the Palms. And so we ordered those. We asked for a French onion soup. We were going to share it. They did two little mini ones instead.
Oh, cool.
Came out, and each of us got our own ramekin and our own melty cheese, so that was cool. Lobster-filled pierogies.
Ooh.
So good, man.
I'm a pierogi person anyway, but then you throw something like that in there, and they're already kind of buttery and creamy. I'm like,
so good, man.
Now I'm hungry.
And then we did a crab cake, nice citrus, you know, notes in that, and really, really good. Look, berries ain't cheap. Let's be honest about that, but you ain't going to walk away like disappointed. If you want to break into the piggy bank, it's a good place to go. You're going to have a great meal, and you're going to have a good time. So, and I got to see Chef Barry, so that was nice. And he was looking at me like, what the fuck are you wearing in my restaurant? No, he was really cool. I got a high five from him, so that's cool, as he was cooking for some people. Sunday, and everyone sitting at this table here was at the new Crossroads brunch inside Resorts World, Tal Ronan's vegan restaurant.
Yep.
So I want to hear, this is going to be my thoughts, first thoughts, and hear what all of you guys had to say about this. Okay, so first of all, I think that Tal Ronan's food is too good to do buffet style. I think it is too upscale to do buffet style.
I could go with that, yeah.
And I enjoyed his brunch much more when it was served plated, when the things were composed a little better. Now, that being said, that is just a criticism of the format, right? And a lot of people love an all-you-can-eat buffet. I'm not going to tell you there's anything wrong with it. I would have just preferred to order these dishes individually. No, I'm getting them comped. So, you know, I'm not checking every time I order something. I don't have to pay more. So for the average person, I'm sure they love it this way a lot better. But that was my biggest problem with it. It's just, I thought that, you know, the French toast, when you're taking it out of a steam tray, you know, the eggs, and I'm putting the air quotes up, Benedict, out of a steam tray, just not the best representation of what are very good dishes.
Yeah.
And that would be my only complaint about it. It's not a complaint, really, because it's just a change in formatting. You know, the chicken and basically anything that was a fake animal protein was less successful for me than the things that were mainstream fruits and vegetables, but I still thought they were good. Yeah. You know, the chicken, which is the Gardein chicken and waffles, like, yeah, that's cool. It was like chicken flavored. It was like chicken pudding mashed into a chicken breast shape and fried, and it was very good. You know, I mean, but you know, it's just that doesn't sit with
me. And for me, I actually found the texture was really okay, and what really brought it home, because I knew that I was eating, you know, some composed, you know, fake meat product, was the seasoning on the outside, on that coating and things like that. So my first bite, I was actually really impressed. If you hadn't told me, I might not have known it wasn't chicken.
I mean, to me, I may not have known it wasn't animal chicken, but I would have thought it was Chicken McNugget style chicken, right?
Okay,
like where it's extruded
McNugget.
And then they make it. And that's just, look, that's the nature of making a fake protein.
It is.
I mean, and so people loved it and good for them. The, you know, again, the bacon... really weird in how close it came to resembling
that
a bacon texture
close.
And a bacon flavor.
Like it even had that, like, and I know I'm repeating myself from Sunday, but it had that like rendered fat quality, that crisp, and then it got soft.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, are you sure this isn't real bacon?
Yeah, no, that was probably the most successful faux meat.
Oh, gosh.
I actually, as a guy who hates carrots, I love the smoked carrots that they do as lox for the lox and bagels. I hate the earthiness of carrots and other sweet root vegetables. Yeah. And I think the smoke actually took out some of that soil taste from them. And it was really cool. I've always loved their vegan caviar made with kelp. And I thought it was
so
fantastic. And just a lot of really good dishes. Plus, I love the vibe. I love there's a piano player there. I love the rock and roll art on the wall. You know, it's just a really, really good place. So there's my thoughts. So the three of you guys, what was I wrong on?
I thought you were right on the carrot lox. Like that was my favorite thing, but I did like the buffet. Like I thought it was actually really pretty and stuff, but the food, I didn't really like it at all. Like I didn't feel like, just cause it was like vegan, you don't feel very full afterwards. Like, you know, like there isn't just like this.
Yeah,
when we went to the food court after.
Yeah, we went to the food court and had a duck bowl, and I would say it was like way better than that.
I mean, I've had that happen when I've eaten raw foods, but not necessarily like you know cooked vegan foods so much. But you know, even when you get to my age, you don't want to feel that full afterwards. So maybe that's a difference too. Well, you know,
like it
just
didn't feel.
Favorite?
The carrot lox, it just didn't feel very fulfilling, you know, for $55 a person for like fruits and vegetables and stuff.
Ooh.
Like I didn't feel very like satisfied, or the service was meh. Like everything was just eh, you know, like I've been there for dinner, like with like not like without comp, like actually paying. And it was just like also kind of disappointing. The
really?
Pizza crust.
I love this place.
Eh. Like, but the calamari that he does is really good. Like, I would say that's like the best thing from Crossroads, like by far. Like, it actually tastes like delicious. I could eat like a ton of it.
You know, he makes those calamari from the same mushrooms that he makes his scallops out of, just a different part of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish we had seen a little bit more of that, because that's what I remember from reading the dinner menus and things like that, is I kind of wanted to see a little bit more of that. Mm-hmm. Like you said, I did like the chicken. I loved the caviar. I was actually really impressed by these really high-end looking cheeses. I've had cashew nut cheese and things like that before.
I was pleasantly surprised by the high-end vegan cheese.
Yeah. I like the cheese board.
The cheese board was really good. And one of the things I wanted to add to the lox is that I liked that it still had the crunch of the carrot, like it wasn't like soggy or anything like that. But I also liked that when it was displayed, at least, I don't know if this has anything to do with the actual prep, but the brine from the capers on there with that smoke, when I first took a fork and went to bite it, like I got a little bit of that nose, and it kind of reminded me of that smoked fish bite that you would get off the bagel. And so what I did is I added the red onion and I added some tomato and made a bite with some of that cream cheese. We're using air quotes here. And I really enjoyed it.
I would say,
especially with that lox.
For the brunch menu, they used to do it as a bagel tower.
Yeah.
I think the lox and bagels with the caviar, that is the best brunch item across the board at Crossroads Kitchen. It always has been. And I would rather just order that a la carte myself, but that's just me.
Yeah.
So what about you, Emmy?
I feel like it's a good start. It's a work in progress. Yeah. I think it's a great value for $55 all you can eat brunch on the Strip. I mean, where else?
Yeah, and people love that all you can eat format, and yeah. they keep getting more and more expensive to do that wherever you go. So that
pricing, as you're mentioning, that's actually a good point, because so many buffets now are you're waiting in 3-hour lines and you're paying $100+ a person, and because there are hardly any buffets in town
anymore. Exactly.
And so not only scarcity, but then the idea that everything has to be higher end, higher end, higher end, the more they do it, $55 for, you know,
a little bit of
something for everybody.
And at the end of the day, if you're a vegan, there are not a lot of places. And if you're a militant vegan where you don't want any cross-contamination or anything in the place, could never have looked at an animal or, you know, that kind of shit, you're not going to find it. There's two places on the Strip you're going to go. You're going to go to Truth and Tonic over at Canyon Ranch Spa in the Venetian, or you're going to go to Crossroads, Crossroads being the more elevated of the two.
Yeah.
And their desserts, surprisingly good for vegan desserts.
The ice cream is so good. Yeah. I love the ice cream there.
I tried the strawberry shortcake and the tiramisu, and I found them super creamy. I thought the tiramisu was a little more butterscotch than cocoa and coffee, but I loved the texture of the so-called cheesecake. I loved that there was some, you know, nuts in there. The strawberries were nice and fresh in their own little glaze. I was pleasantly surprised by
those. I agree with you. I was wishing for that hot fudge sundae. That is one of their signature items at dinner time. I wish they could have added that.
That would have been fun.
Where else have I been, just so I get these out of the way? Pizza Expo's in town, we talked about. I didn't get in. I didn't register in advance. I'm like one of the... So this is all my fault, not their fault. But
yeah, I was given a link to register, and I completely forgot anything about it.
I always do walk-up registration at every event, and this one didn't really have it, and I couldn't get in, so whatever. But Monday, I went to a couple parties. Went to Vincent Rotolo's party over at Good Pie, which was fantastic. Yep. With Mike, I met Mike from Mike's Hot Honey. That was cool. And then I went to Scott Wiener's party. So what happens is, the night before, usually it's the Sunday before the expo, Tony Gemignani throws a huge party for every pizza maker in the country that goes to Pizza Rock downtown.
Yep.
Starting last year... first of all, this year they moved it because Sunday was St. Patrick's Day, and you can't, you know, do a buyout on St. Patrick's Day. This is for a bunch of crazy Irish people. So they moved it to Monday, but for the last 2 years, Scott Wiener has taken his Slice Out Hunger event, and he's moved it out to the streets in front of Pizza Rock prior to Tony's party. And it was a really, really cool event. And, you know, I think there were about a dozen or so pizza makers from around the country. It was great. And I spoke to Scott about, you know, what he was doing over there. And here's what he had to say.
So this is the tailgate event. This is like the big opening event for the Pizza Expo, which is an event that's a pizza industry event. And because of that, it means that people who are not in the industry or are not going to the convention center just don't have access to it. So this is our way of making the event accessible to people. You've got the best pizza makers in the world all visiting your town. You should be able to enjoy them.
And how many people you have here today, and what are they churning out? Tell people what they're missing if they miss this one.
Well, we got a couple dozen pizza makers, more than that, and we said to them all, listen, we can provide dough, sauce, cheese, some other stuff. You bring whatever else you want, make whatever pie you want, and we encourage people to collaborate. So they're making pizza that's unlike what you would normally get from their shops, and you're really just experiencing not just pizzerias, you're experiencing talented pizza makers.
And these are not just Las Vegas pizza makers that you brought out here, right?
Dude, these are some local, some visiting, some international. It's a mix. Just like Las Vegas, it's a mix.
And, of course, today's event is to benefit Slice Out Hunger. So tell me about Slice Out Hunger and the work that you guys do.
Slice Out Hunger is a network of pizzeria owners, pizza operators, pizza partners across the United States that all band together to try to do good for their communities. We're focused on fighting food insecurity. We know that there are way too many people out there who cannot afford to treat food like it's a thing to be enjoyed. And we want to spread the love of that by providing pizza to shelters and to soup kitchens. So Slice Out Hunger raises money like we do at an event like this for programs. We have a program that this is supporting. The program's called Pie It Forward. Pie It Forward collects money And we take that money and we use it to buy pizza from independent restaurants and send it to shelters and soup kitchens.
So you're helping in that case, not just the people who are hungry, but also local businesses.
Exactly. We support local businesses. We ask our pizza partners to just help us out. You give us a little discount, some way that the money will go farther than if you were to call up a pizzeria and buy two pizzas to go donate to somebody. We have a little bit more power with it because, you know, we work with these pizzerias a lot. You know, we're an organization that's there to help the pizza community, and that's not just people who sell pizza for money. It's also people who enjoy pizza. It's a whole community.
Next up, friends and family night at Atomic Golf. I texted you last night to try to come, but
I know.
You were not coming, man.
No,
you're too busy hanging out with
Wiley
Dufresne and shit, man. Man, I gotta watch. I'm gonna have a child-friendly vocabulary on this show, man. Anyway, Atomic Golf is great. I had a lot of fun over there. And the two periods of hockey I watched over there went well.
Good.
Period three did not. They've got four floors. They've got four menus. I was invited by my friend, Chef Robert Lamelli, and I spoke to him about finally opening to the public this Friday, which is the day this episode drops. First of all, congratulations. How are you feeling about finally having the place open?
Oh, man, I am so excited and happy and finally home. We finally have a home that we can cook at, that we can produce all of this food and actually cook for all of these people. These last few days have been fantastic, man, fantastic.
So people are finally getting to taste things, right? How's the feedback been so far?
Finally, they're finally tasting everything. So far, feedback has been phenomenal, which actually is more than I was hoping for. I mean, of course, we come in with that confidence that we're gonna be okay and that everything's gonna be fine because we came out with a very different product and you're gonna see it soon. But so far the reception has been great, man.
Cool. So for those who haven't had a chance to go online and look at the menu yet, who may not know what to expect when they come here, could you give them an idea, an overview of what the food's gonna be like at Atomic Golf?
Absolutely, man. I mean, think about, when you're thinking about the bay menu is elevated bar food on its twisted self, man. It's actually really cool. But we also have the Cosmic Lounge, and the Cosmic Lounge menu is elevated. We're about 10 items on there. Anything from like hamachi collar with an artichoke salsa verde. We have the roasted bone marrow with short rib jam on it. So we really went a step above on that aspect. Everything that you're gonna get here is recognizable, but twisted. And we love it, man.
As for dishes we liked, man, we had this, I don't know what it was called on the menu, because he gave us some of the approachable stuff for the bays, but then
sure.
He sent out some of the more gourmet stuff,
yeah,
which wasn't on the night's menu that we were there, but
okay.
He wanted me to try it. So I'm just going to call these things how I have them in my notes. Banh mi style steak frites is what I would call this
okay.
dish of French fries with all of the banh mi kind of toppings that you would have on there. You know, the carrots and the basil and the, you know, and all that shit, and then this great steak, sliced steak on top.
Ooh.
Right, so that was a fantastic dish. I had a flatbread called the Hipster, which was bacon, apple, caramelized onions, bacon, apple, blue cheese. That was really good. Big dog duo. So they did, they have Snappo Razzo hot dogs.
Yes.
One of them was topped with street corn. The other was jalapeno and cheese. We are agreed that you could have done this dish with lower quality hot dog and nobody would notice. But the fact that they're using Snappo Razzo says a lot
yeah.
about them doing that. Kahlua pig quesadilla with blueberry salsa.
Ooh.
That was the sleeper hit of it for me
yeah.
because we didn't get that till I was already stuffed, but I fell in love with it the minute I got it. We did some wings. They were lollipop, basic, and a weird dish, lobster and popcorn. Now, I've had lobster dishes with popcorn at like Michael Mina and some
yeah.
other places, but it's just an accent usually. This was sort of a plate, and the lobster was on the bottom and a heavy seasoned kind of sauce, and then the popcorn thrown on top of that. So you sort of had to eat it with a fork, and
yeah.
I love the flavor combinations. I enjoyed the texture combinations, but I didn't like eating it with a fork, really.
The presentation.
You know, so I'm not sure. Anyway, it was a lot of fun, and, you know, I'm pretty psyched to have Atomic Golf over there. I hit a golf ball. I hit a fucking golf ball.
You're so excited right now. I love this.
Never outside of like putting been I've gone up to Top Golf and I've
yeah.
tried, and I've been like the guy who just swings and then falls down and hurts himself. So I actually hit one. We were on the second floor and I made it like out over the net that catches you if you
yeah.
fall, and actually out it bounced to the first target. It
nice.
Bounced all the way. So I was feeling good about that, and that's about all I'm gonna offer you guys for now.
Well, coming up in the news, wine at the Rio and Margaritaville is shuttering. But first, we're going to speak to a mother-daughter team of Las Vegas reporters who use two very different media to express themselves and see if we can explain the generation gap in food reporting. This is Food and Loathing.
Here you are in Vegas, you're hungry, and the choices are endless. But do you really want to trust the crowd? You can trust Neon Feast. Restaurant recommendations from real food pros sharing where they send friends and family. All that knowledge is just a download away on the Neon Feast app. You want the strip, off strip, downtown, great views, great value? Find smart, informed restaurant recommendations on the Neon Feast app and neonfeast.com.
Joining us officially for this segment, even though we've heard from them already in this episode, we have the former editor-in-chief for The List and Vegas Magazine, among many other great positions. She currently writes for Eater and others. A lifelong lifestyle journalist whom I've written for many times, Emmy Kasten, and her daughter, Alex, who runs two social media accounts that I know of, at FrogPurse on TikTok, which has over 70,000 followers, which is like 10 times all of my
over 80,000, almost 90,000.
Oh, man, did I
add another 10,000 to that?
I apologize. Shit, man. Okay, I thought I checked. Well, that's why I need you here. I apologize, man.
Every follower counts.
Every follower. Okay, man, now I'm in trouble already. Shit's just starting. But I love it that you're sticking up for yourself. Thank God. And yeah, that's like a billion times as many people who have ever seen anything I've done on social media. So it's pretty impressive. So the reason I wanted to have you guys here is because you do represent two different generations who have told people about food, about lifestyle, about resorts, about properties, about the things that we define as luxury. And you do it in two very different ways. So, Alex, how did you get into being a content creator?
Well, like, I think I've been doing it forever. So when I was like 10, I made like a squishy and slime YouTube channel. And I think that was like the origins of all of it. Like, a lot of my videos got a ton of views and I was like super proud of that. And I decided to continue with it because I just love to make videos and stuff.
Cool.
To just show.
How many views?
Like, one of my videos, it wasn't that much, but it was like got like 20,000 views.
Oh, that's pretty damn
that's
good.
For like a 9-year-old, I think that was really good. And I edited all my own videos and stuff. So like it gave me like, I felt like very proud of myself. Like I was doing my own thing now. I was like, oh yeah, this is something I can do. And I felt like good doing it.
Were you inspired by any of your mother's work as a journalist and a reporter? Or were you inspired more by growing up with a generation that are just gravitating towards content creation?
I would say it's a mixture of both. You know, like a lot of my friends, like obviously the same age, like they don't do anything of YouTube or Instagram or TikTok. They don't like to post. Like, of course, they have the same influences as me, but because I have like a mom who does more of that stuff, I feel like more inclined to do it.
Okay, cool. Now, by the way, I forgot to say, so it's at Frog Purse's TikTok. That's the
yes.
one with close to 90,000 followers.
Yes.
And then you also have one where you do some food stuff over on Instagram, right? And
yes.
that's at alixalix.eats, EATS.
Yes.
And yeah, slightly smaller audience over there, but that's more food specific that you do there. So let's make sure we give people that so they can follow you. Mm-hmm. And now back to my line of questioning. So, Emmy, when your daughter came to you and you saw she was doing content creation, that she was actually kind of in many ways following in your footsteps of turning people on to cool stuff, what were your first thoughts?
I was a proud mama, for sure. I think even before she was a willing participant in it all, I was kind of paving the way for her to do such a thing. We were doing it with fashion at the very beginning. And she was a natural. Like, she knew how to call out the brands she was wearing. She knew what to say, how to hold it in front of the camera. So I was really happy to see that she wanted to take it in her own direction. And she really does have her finger on the pulse of what people want. The number of views she gets on things without even trying is fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, right? With that weird algorithm and how that works.
Yeah.
And, you know, not being guaranteed an audience, which I think our generation, you know, you knew. I mean, I was with ABC News Radio. I knew if I sent a report in, it would get played on 2,000 stations. We knew how many people listened. We're guaranteed a couple million people were going to hear me talking about something, down to, you know, and when I was writing for, you know, print publications, you know what their circulation is. You know about how many people it lands on. TikTok and Instagram and Reels and all that shit, you don't know, right? I mean, that's very weird, Alex, not knowing how many people are going to see it, and that you're at the mercy of, you know, basically a glorified Alexa deciding who to put your stuff in front of, right?
Basically. Like, some of the videos can get, like, oh, like, 2 million views. And then the other one's like, okay, you get 10,000. So, you know, it's, like, kind of random.
Yeah, some of the stuff that we think is just gorgeous and it's like so special and a very, very elite group of people even get access to this restaurant or whatever we think is going to do great, and then like falls on its face. But then yet a really terrible picture of a piece of chocolate cake at a random restaurant
will get
tons of views. Like even on Google, what was that one?
Yeah, so it was a piece of chocolate cake, like a random piece of
at Crush at MGM.
Yeah.
I posted that on Google Reviews, and it literally has 2 million views or something. And like other photos
it's
are like
dark, it's not well lit.
Yeah, no, I just took that photo and it was like so random, but like other things I'm like, yeah, this is the photo, like 4 views.
Oh, that sucks. That hurts, right? Oh, so Emmy, as a journalist, I am sure that you've been trained to value brevity and concise, you know, I mean, it's always the deal for an editor. You're always, you know, you always have the journalist like me who you ask for 600 words and I give you 9, right? And you say like, no, Al, this is only 600 words. Cut it down. So that we've been trained to do that. And I used to go to the Grammys and I'd spend 4 hours on the red carpet. I'd spend 3 hours backstage. I'd also record the entire show and then I'd have to do an ABC News report where I'd get 35 seconds to splice all of my backstage interviews together. So I'm used to that, right? But that being said, 15 seconds, Alex. Your videos are generally less than 13 seconds, the ones that I looked at.
Yeah.
To you, Emmy, is it like mind-boggling how quickly she's able to, how the brevity that she's able to bring to her subject matter?
Yes, because she does it so quickly. It would take me hours to edit something down to 12 seconds. Whereas for her, she does it on the fly.
Yeah.
And it is like, at the most, it would be 20 minutes.
Wow.
Just put out the content.
Thank you.
Just come and take my content and put it out for me, please.
Right?
Did this fast pace come naturally to you, Alex, having grown up with social media? Or did you need to learn how to just bring it down?
I think it came kind of naturally. Like even today, my mom was like, you read everything too fast. You go everything like really fast paced. And I think a lot of like me and everybody like my age have like a really short attention span. So you have to get them. You have to like get them at like the first like second. Otherwise they'll scroll away.
Right.
So,
which is frustrating as hell to those of us. Okay. So here's the thing. When I look at your stuff, first of all, I'm blown away by how good it is, how beautiful
it
looks.
Thank you so much.
And I would put you in the category of some of the better food photographers that I know in this town. These are the people that I would think of, right? And I am a big fan of professional photographers. Mm-hmm. But professional photographers are kind of a different vibe than journalists, which is what your mom has always done. A professional photographer usually either gets hired by the publication or gets hired by the restaurant or the clothing company or the models or the designer, not the models, and gets told, go out and shoot these things, right? And it is kind of you're not necessarily trying to tell your own story, professional photographers, right? They're there to capture something. And your stuff reminds me of that. It doesn't remind me of stuff that's being put out there so that I walk away with a lot of information. Now, for example, you go into a Sephora and you give me 13 seconds of cool shit that you've seen in a Sephora.
Yeah.
And it's amazing and it looks good. But to me, that looks like a Sephora ad. right?
Okay, yeah.
It doesn't necessarily say, hey, Al, if you have sensitive skin on your beard, this is going to be the shaving cream that you want to use. Now, I'm raised as a journalist to want to give that kind of information.
Right.
That is my training to try it. When I walk into a place, you know, you heard what we just all talked about Crossroads.
Yeah.
You were part of a conversation that took 10 minutes of us to talk about that. I'm assuming if you were to do a Crossroads video, it would be 13 seconds.
It would be 13 seconds of, oh, look at the food. So, like, I feel like I could add that into the caption, but I feel like I like to post pretty photos, and that's just my favorite thing to do. Like, I don't think I'm very informative, but if I were to do a longer video, yeah, I would add some, like, oh, this carrot lox is really good, or this salad bar was really pretty, like, something like that.
Do you feel any pressure to be more informative, or any desire to be more informative?
No.
Like, do people your age want more information? When they see this, are they going to go out and then Google the place, go to the restaurant's website, maybe come to Neon Feast and read about it, hint,
right.
Or something like that? Or are you guys, is your generation just like, oh, that's pretty, I'll file it away, and maybe when I'm in that town, I'll remember that they had pretty shit there, and maybe I'll walk in?
Ooh, I kind of do both, you know? Like, I do both. So I feel like people, my generation, so there's this photo of this, like, K-pop idol, and she was in her bedroom.
This what?
K-pop idol.
Okay, K-pop
and
idol.
She
yes.
was, like, basically stretching or something, and the background was blurred, but there was, like, this very, like, you could see her skincare in the back, and people were, like, zooming in, and they were like, oh, my God, and, like, they, like, bought it, and it sold out.
People are willing to do that, but they won't stay. That's mind-boggling to me that somebody will watch a 15-second video, and then we'll then take the time to blow it up to find out. But if you took 40 seconds to tell them what was in the background, right. they would scroll right by.
Yeah, it would take too long.
There have been lots of times where Alex will say, watch this video, and we'll pause at the second of the thing that she wants to show me.
Yes.
And from that pause, she'll then drill in deeper to learn more about that product, person, place, or thing.
But the content creator's not giving you all that shit.
But the content creator's not. It's
that
more
seems
about
lazy of the content creator for me, but I know that it has to be done in order to get the attention of people who don't have attention spans.
Well, I think a lot of it, too, is you know, you're sort of creating that FOMO thing. Like, I have this, you can see it. You're watching this because you're interested in anything I've told you before. Mm-hmm. Because I admit, I am somebody that watches some of these videos, and if they're a little too short and something grabs my eye, I will absolutely do a Google search and try and find out what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
I often find, though, if I take a video that Alex has made, which I've done lots of times, and put into my stories, that they're too fast for my friends, my personal peer group, because they're used to ingesting content on a slower basis. And you can see that with a lot of people of a certain age who post, like, their reels are very, very slow.
Yeah. Mine, for example. Mine are slow as the heck, we'll say, because I'm going to keep it family friendly here. Mine is slow as hell, but I feel like I tell people something, so I feel good about that. And then I got 7 views, and then I feel like I wasted my time. You know? And then I want to shoot myself in the head, but that's a whole other thing. Okay, so do you do this professionally? Do you make money doing this?
I have before. Like, I did a little commercial for, like, you know, Koya protein drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I've actually done a lot of food. I did something for Splendid Spoon. It was a 1-minute video, actually, like, pretty informative, using my voice. And so I did that. But I've done, like, a few things.
People you met at the Fancy Food Show.
Oh, yeah, People I've met at the Fancy Food Show, I've done videos for them, like, Dream Pops. They're, like, a vegan ice cream brand.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just, like, literally just going like this and showing all the pretty products. There's not, like, oh, this is sugar-free or this is vegan. It's, like, oh, this is pretty. And then it got, like, 5,000 likes. So, you know.
More likes than they ever got on any of their things.
Yeah, and I did something for... Yeah, but mostly Dream Pops. Dream Pops is my favorite one.
So you've done a few, but for the most part, what you're posting are things that are reflecting your personal choices, things you like, things you enjoy, right?
Yeah.
In for people your age who are looking at this as a potential business model, a potential way to make a living, is the general consensus that you have to give up on that idea of posting the stuff you like because you then become like that hired gun for hire photographer that I was just talking about? And I look at my photographer friends who are some of the best food, my opinion, best food photographer in Las Vegas has got to be Saban Orr, right? And he's absolutely fantastic. You know, best, I could tell you who my favorite live music photographer is. There's other people that do other things great, but he's the absolute best, right? But I don't fit, and he makes everything look gorgeous, much that you make everything look cool when you do it. But as much as I like the food porn of looking at his food, I don't feel that he's telling me that he likes this when I see his photos because I know that he's been hired. So what I wonder is there sort of a tacit acknowledgement in people of your generation that if you want to do this for a living, you are eventually going to have to, is that sellout thing is maybe not as big a problem for your generation as it was for people in my generation, I'm wondering.
I think that you can definitely still add what you like on your videos, but like certain things will get more likes. Like, okay, like if you do something that's like, there's, okay, this is like a weird example, but like some fashion models, okay, they're going to like, they might wear an outfit they met like on their Instagram and it might get less likes, but when they're wearing a bikini, you'll get more likes.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you just have to do a little bit of both and balance.
Yeah, you got to pimp it out, right?
Yeah. So like you just have to balance like what you like and like what your audience likes, but then your audience will like start to like what you like. They'll be like, oh, so she likes this, I like this too.
So you do view yourself as being able to, quote, and I hate the word influencer the way that it's used commonly, but that you are influencing people, because that's the other thing that bothers me. I grew up not even wanting my editors to tell me what to write, right? Like, and I would fight with my editors. The idea of letting the general public and a computer algorithm tell me what I need to put into my video in order to get it like, I wanted to, you know, I'm very, I guess you're more of a populist. You're like, okay, this is what the people like. We're going to give them what they like. It's going to get my stuff. Seems like maybe less ego in the influencer culture, even though we like to say that you guys are more egotistical and you don't put a lot of your own photos in, but so many do, right? Yeah. They only want their own face and things like that. And it's quick for me to classify you guys as having a larger ego than my generation had. But then when I think about it, you're so much more willing to let the algorithm tell you what you need to do than I ever was. So yeah, how do you balance those two urges, I guess?
You create
a different channel.
You can create a different channel. That's why I have that like one, like Alex Eats for the food, and then Frog Purse for like the like beauty stuff. So because sometimes people who like beauty and stuff don't always want to see a bunch of weird like food and stuff, and sometimes the food people don't want to see a bunch of beauty. So you know, like yeah, you create a different channel, or you can alternate the videos, and like so one beauty video gets like 20,000 likes, and then the next one, a food video, might get like 3,000, and like you just have to like get those beauty people like after that. So
kind of ease them into it.
Yeah, ease them into it. But yeah, creating a second channel is like the best idea, because you can just have like two different audiences.
Yeah. So when you look at Alex's videos through an old media lens, what would your thought be when you see them? If somebody brought these to you as an editor and wanted to put them in one of your publications, you know, what's your that's not what the assignment is. I get it, but I'm wondering what the first impressions are when you see these videos.
I would be much like you. I would want more information. What am I looking at? Mm-hmm. Where is the SERP? Was it good? Did you like it? Who made it? Like yeah. I would have a million of those questions. They're beautiful. They're beautiful videos. She takes great pride into making things colorful and happy. She's gotten lots of fan mail where people have said she cures their anxiety watching these 12-second videos.
Yeah.
That's weird because they make me anxious.
Right.
Like, shit, I got to eat all that in 12 seconds.
So my initial inclination would be like, I think this looks great, but we need to back it up with something that gives the information that I'd be looking
right.
for.
Right. Yeah, that's where I come to it from as well. Also, when I do an interview, you sort of always look for the, and sometimes, by the way, this can be exploitative, what I'm about to say, but you look for the interview and you got that one poll quote, right? And it's like, you know, that's going to be your headline, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I give you examples. You know, what James Trees said to us in the middle of a 35-minute interview, he made a joke about a Quentin Tarantino movie. Well, that was the headline on Neon News.
Yeah.
James Trees wants to make his next restaurant the Quentin Tarantino films, right? And I was so proud I got that because that's going to hook people
yeah.
and get them in. Now, of course, you're doing it in a different way, but is there that money shot that you want? Is there that when you have done all of your video shooting, I hear it in an interview. I hear that one line and I go, that's my pull quote. That's yeah. the thing that's going to get me attention. When you're doing your shoot, do you go, oh, that's the one thing. I just got it. I got that now. That shot that I just got of the dress, that's going to be the one that pulls them in? Or do you have to look through all the footage afterwards to know that you caught that beautiful shot?
I feel like when it happens, like it happens, you know, like I feel like one of my people, like, they like sunsets and stuff in the background of the bathroom.
Yeah, but when you're like, shooting it. So the question is, like, when you're shooting it and you shoot an image, are you like, this is going to be the lead image that's going to lead people into the video?
Yeah, like,
you know it at the moment that you've shot it. That's sort of the question I'm asking. Or do you not know it until you review all the footage?
Yeah, like I can choose which one is going to be the thumbnail. Like,
yeah, the
well.
Thumbnail.
Yeah. yeah.
Like,
yeah.
and you do you know it the in minute, the moment?
In the moment. Do you know that that's going to be the thumbnail, I guess, is my question. And if you don't know whether you know it, that's cool, too. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I feel like I can kind of know which one is going to be, like, the best one.
yeah. I mean, well, clearly you pick the ones that are the best ones because you're getting a gajillion yeah. people to like it. I'm just wondering if you've ever, if you ever look at, like, at old media and you see an aspect of it that's in that media that you're like, oh, wow, I'd really like to work in that media so that I could do that. I'd really like to be able to tell these tiny little anecdotes. I'd really like to be able to dig a little deeper. I'd really like to be able to get more of my own personality. Are there any things you see in traditional media that make you want to sort of work in that media one day?
I don't know. I like it. Like, I feel like what I do and what they do is like very different. So,
but you have flexed the muscle from time to time where you have helped me even mm-hmm. when I've written articles for whether it be Eater or The Infatuation, where I've said, give me a starter. Like, Alex acts as my AI.
Yeah.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
And well, what about, let me take this to you. What
yeah.
about you when you look at the medium of what she does? Do you see comparative advantages, things that she's able to do that we were never able to do using the mediums that with the media that we've used, and kind of make you a little jealous?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, it's important for us as the older media generation to grow and change and do learn as much as we can from mm-hmm. these guys and give it a spin of our own. I 100% think that her video formats are great. It's made me feel like our storytelling may be a little bit too long
mm-hmm.
for, you know, this generation, for the people who need information. Like, how can, you know, the editor in me is like, how can we make this shorter?
Yeah.
Right.
Without sacrificing the points that you want to get across.
And that's what I struggle with when I play with some of this new media, air quotes. I've had a lot of experience in social media, but it's changing and growing, and the ability that you're given to do so many different things changes year to year. And so, yeah, I struggle with, am I still putting out enough info if I'm cutting it down to what is a popular size or a popular length or whatever that might be. I have a tough time wrapping my head around it sometimes.
Yeah. One more thing before we leave, because we are running low on time. Alex, how much does you shooting your content cut into the experience of experiencing where you are? Because one of the greatest challenges for me is that I shoot everything at active meals. I am with family. I am with friends. Nobody around me wants me to shoot video. They want to eat their freaking food. And, you know, I have picked my lighting that I use, you know, that it can be held in one hand and manipulated with a hand while I'm using the phone in the other hand. I still get my thumb in the way too often, right? But I very much try to rush through because I'm very conscious that I am inconveniencing the people around me. So for you, how much does the shoot eat into the experience?
Okay, so like when I'm with my grandma and grandpa, I never ever take photos because they really want to eat. Once the food hits the table, it is like they put their fork out. They're ready to eat. So like I nothing with them. But when I do these things, I because my videos are so short, like the amount of content I shoot is smaller. So it doesn't really cut into everything that much. So like I take the video and okay, it's like, that was good. Like I take the photo and then it's time to eat, you know? Like, so I don't think it takes that much time, but if it does take like any more than like 30 seconds, like my brother will go, "Oh, the camera eats first." And then like,
glad to know it's not just my wife.
So,
but even when you were in Japan last week at the pizza meal and it's 8 people at a table.
Yeah.
You don't want to be that rude person who is,
I think,
infringing on their
experience.
I think
now, even at that pizza thing, they were like, they would bring up the pizza to you and like, so you take photos. So it's like not cutting into your experience and more just adding to it because you can remember it more later. Like if I didn't take all these photos, I feel like I would just like, it would be more of a faded memory. But now that I have like something to like actually remember it, it's like, it's more solidified.
If I could not write this podcast notes if I didn't have a picture of every dish that I ate, right? Because that's just my, there you go. Oh, yeah, I forgot I had that, right? So it definitely helps you. As a journalist, you're documenting everything.
Yep.
And as a result, you have far better notes than other people.
And you're living in the moment. It's not taking away.
Yeah, like, cool. I feel like it adds to my experience because I get to remember it more. And I can, like, look at it from 10 years from now and be like, aw, that was so cool.
Yeah, see, my problem is that when I'm shooting, it's usually when the chef is telling, and I'm talking about media events especially because I go to a lot of these. That's when the chef is telling me stuff, right? But it's when I have to get my shot because that's before everybody puts their fork in it. And then I've got the great Michael Mina telling me something about where a fish was caught. And I'm too busy trying to get my thumb out of the light. And that makes me crazy, you know?
Yeah.
So I could honestly sit here for like an hour and talk to you and pick your brain.
Oh,
I know that in the long run, I'm going to end up working for you one day. So be nice. I really am so thankful that you take some time to enlighten people like me who really don't understand basically just the mindset of this media, because I understand the medium. I'm not stupid. I get it. I know what it is you guys do, but it's the mindset underlying it that fascinates me. You know, I was not set to be an old person. You know, I was always like, I always was on top of shit, and now I'm not anymore. It really depresses me. So you make me feel so good that you've helped me see some insight into how your generation thinks. Thank you so much for your time. Tell people again where they can follow you.
So my Instagram is AlixEats, Alix Eats. And then my TikTok is FROGPURSE, Frog First. That was like a spelling competition. But yeah, those are my two social medias. Like, those are my main ones.
Awesome. Thank you. And Emmy, first of all, thanks for bringing Alix in. Thanks for letting her share her wisdom with us. And thanks for everything you've done for me over my career.
Oh, my gosh. And thank you.
Where can people read you right now?
Right now, I do a lot of stuff for The Infatuation, occasional stuff for Eater, and more stuff to be announced very, very soon.
Well, I cannot wait. Okay.
It.
Well, hey, we don't pay a lot of neon news, but if you ever want to write for us, you're always welcome.
I would love
man.
That. So I would be honored.
That would be great.
It would be awesome. Thank you guys so much for your
Thank
time.
You.
The news is next. This is Food and Loathing. It's time for the news. Short one this week. The wine cellar at the Rio is reopening. Actually, it should be open now by the time this drops. Jonathan Wright has some news on that in the RJ, so check it out. But no news in Jonathan's article on whether the cool stuff that used to be in that wine cellar at the Rio in the old days would be there. The old Thomas Jefferson bottle of Madeira and the bottles from the Titanic and stuff like that. So I want to investigate that. I doubt they're bringing that back, but just bravo. A flashback to the days when Jean-Louis Paladin was at the Rio doing Napa, and that wine cellar was an accompaniment for that. Multiple sources are reporting that Margaritaville at the Flamingo is closing on April 15th. It's weird news for me because I hosted radio stations at the opening of that. I brought like 10 stations in, 5 stations, whatever, from around the country. We all sat on the patio. Jimmy Buffett came down and talked to them and brought a lot of guests, some weird people at that thing. So, man, that's weird. But Jimmy Buffett, of course, is now dead. And I am now old, and Margaritaville is now closing. And that's life, people. That's how it works out. Everybody dies and closes. Blue Ribbon Sushi and Station Casinos are set March 28th as the grand opening date. Rebirth life into that, you know, thing. The circle of life here. Grand opening date for the new Blue Ribbon in Green Valley Ranch. I'll be at that party. I'll let you know about it. 1923 Prohibition Bar in Mandalay Place is adding a VIP experience called Nolan Nights to their offerings on Friday and Saturday nights in April. GA admission is actually going to remain free on those nights, but the VIP packages start at $300. And I'm mentioning it because among the offerings are live music with Troy Romzek and seductive burlesque performances. Not seen good burlesque in Las Vegas in a long time.
I was going to say I have, but it's been a really long time.
And never on the Strip.
Yeah.
So I think that's awesome. And I think that's it for me.
You know, speaking of sad, I've been inundated with news this week, of course, starting the Neon News site, getting that up and going. But I really just have one note to share, and it's a sad one. Jonathan Wright at the RJ posted this last week, and I had a visceral reaction, so I had to reach out to confirm it. I wouldn't think that he would write it otherwise, but I just couldn't believe it, to be honest. Forte Tapas has closed.
Unreal.
Emmy's
right?
Making the face.
Look on
it's exactly
face.
The face we're all making. The beloved Eastern European tapas place, wine and cocktail bar, industry party place, and caviar mecca was located at Rainbow and Flamingo and will be sorely, sorely missed by so many of us. I did message owner and friend Nina Manchev to check in, and that's how I put it. I said, I'm just checking in. How are you? And she simply said it was a process and that she was looking forward to what her future holds. So we all do, Nina, and much luck to you.
Yeah, much love, Nina. Whatever you need us to do to support your next projects,
absolutely,
we're here for you in whatever little way we could do what we do.
Absolutely.
And that is about it for this week. Thanks to all of our guests. You see, I cut my names of all my guests off here on my notes. So let's see. Well, first of all, thank you, Emmy and Alex. Thank you guys for being here. Thanks, Robert Lamelli. Thanks, Scott Wiener. On behalf of Samantha Gemini Stevens and our out-of-town partner, Rich Johnson, I'm Al Mancini. Thank you for listening. Stay hungry.